Tech 7, Chapter 7. The Great Man Theory of Business. Historians have not documented whether Charles de Gaulle or Georges Clemenceau first pronounced that graveyards are full of indispensable men. While that must be so, some chief executives come close to severely testing that aphorism. At the top of any list of such immortals would surely be Steve Jobs, for both creating Apple in the first instance and then returning triumphantly to lift it from crisis to the second most valuable company on Earth, after ExxonMobil. Of course, we don't yet know when or whether Mr. Jobs, a more respected than loved figure, will return or what his absence will mean for the world's hottest enterprise. But what this saga reminds us is the startling difference that individuals can make astride giant companies. In 28 years as a banker, I've seen this narrative repeatedly. In 1984, when Michael Eisner and Frank Wells arrived at a besieged Walt Disney, none of us at the company's advisor, Morgan Stanley, would have wagered a farthing on Disney's chances. Yet over the ensuing 10 years, Disney stock compounded at almost 30% annually. Meanwhile, Lou Gerstner took command of IBM in 1993, and bringing in only a new finance chief and a human resources chief who soon departed, employed hand-to-hand management combat to whip the company into shape. "The last thing this company needs is a vision," he memorably snapped when asked what his strategy was. Not convinced? Consider a few dyads, pairs of companies whose business similarities make easy comparison. For decades, General Motors and Ford have faced essentially identical challenges, the same constricting United Auto Workers agreements, the same oscillating petrol prices, the same competition from Asian car makers, and most recently, the same credit crisis. By 2006, Ford was on the ropes, widely judged to be in worse shape than GM. The family scion, Bill Ford, selflessly decided to relinquish his chief executive role in favour of an industry outsider, Alan Mulally. 3 years later, GM, which clung to its practice of social promotion of insiders, was bankrupt, requiring a $50 billion transfusion of taxpayer funds, while Ford remained solvent and needed no help from Washington. Last year, even with car sales still depressed, Ford almost certainly notched record profits. In business school halls, some discount Welch's accomplishments at GE by arguing it had had a succession of great leaders and that while the chief executive may be most visible, great companies are built by great teams. That may be true, but as Welch once explained to me, A players hire A players, and B players hire B players. Compounding the challenge for companies such as Apple is the likelihood that the more creative the business, the more of a difference one or two executives can make. Don't misunderstand me. Many companies are fine with competent, utterly replaceable managers at the top. And those that have an all-consuming great man at the top can go horribly wrong. Great men don't always know when to leave the stage or how to nurture superstar replacements. The Apple PR machine is insisting that the company has a fine backup team and will continue to excel, with or without him. That's likely to be true, at least for the moment. Stellar Christmas earnings, a seemingly insatiable demand for the company's sleek fleet of products, and a strong product pipeline can surely carry it during a temporary Jobs absence. But just as Apple would never have gone from near extinction little more than a decade ago to $316 billion of market value today without Jobs, it's hard to imagine it maintaining its utter domination of such a hyper-competitive space without him or his clone.